So you should see them both up there today or tomorrow, one. So we're in the middle of our study of 1 Timothy, and we've gone through the first four chapters of 1 Timothy. We're going to do 1 Timothy 5 today. And last week, we studied 1 Timothy 4, and that is a chapter that really talks about the duties of a pastor and elders and Christians and all kinds of stuff. And we went through a lot of things about what we do, what our church does, what the Bible says about that. It tells us to focus on the things not just for the present life, but focus on the things for the future life as well. And that will help us. Talked about being examples, to others. And that's not just for pastors and deacons and elders or Sunday school teachers or whatever. It's for all of us to be examples. We're all called to be witnesses and examples to others. And today, we're going to pick up in chapter 5, and we're going to talk about a little bit about the mission activities of the church. And we're going to talk about it in the context of what Paul wrote to Timothy about, but I want you to think about this, not in the specific case, although that's important too, but think about it in the general case, what it says to us regarding our own mission activities. Let me just say that I went through the whole discussion about the roles of men and women in Ephesus at this time, 60-65 AD. But let me just kind of recount the parts that apply to this. Women in traditional roles, now there are a few examples in the Bible otherwise, but most of the women in traditional roles were not educated, they didn't run businesses, they weren't independently wealthy unless they had money like Lydia or somebody else from a business they ran. And traditionally, they were not Christians when they got involved in this, and so they didn't have the, either the Jewish law or the heavy Greek law or whatever imposed on them. And so the traditional role for women was difficult, and lifespans were short. And many, many times people, we think about people today in their 60s, 70s, and 80s who become widows or widowers because their spouse goes home to be with the Lord or passes away. But in this day and time, we see it today, when 35 and 40-year-olds pass away. But that's much more common in this environment. They didn't have the health care. They didn't have the preventive care. If you got sick, there was no doctor to go see and get your shot of antibiotic or whatever. You toughed it out, and sometimes you made it, and sometimes you didn't. There were hardships and disease and injury, and many, many people died in their 30s and 40s. Lifespans were shorter also, much harder life. So the whole idea of being a widow in a church is a little different than it is today, but the same idea follows. But it does give us some ways to take a look at a general ministry within the church. I'll also say, you remember, because we've talked about this in the role of deacons, in Acts, in chapter, I think it's chapter 1, verse 6 of Acts, if I'm not mistaken. It's either 1:6 or 6:1. Without looking it up, I can't tell you. But it talks about the role of the deacons and why the deacons were placed in the church to care for the widows who were not being, the widows in the church, the Greek widows and the Jewish widows, because of favoritism, some were getting food and some weren't. And so the apostles put a set of men in place to make sure that didn't happen, and that was the deacon ministry. So that ministry was put in place to ensure the widows in the church were taken care of. And so that, a man that was widowed was expected to go get a job and work or do whatever. He was not expected, to look at the church for help. He was expected to do it himself. And so, you don't think, that wasn't talked about much, probably a little different environment today in many respects, but let's take a look at 1 Timothy.
It's Acts 6:1.
6:1. I knew it was one of the two. Thank you, Acts 6:1. We talk about it all the time when we do our deacon stuff, but I can't remember exactly what it was. I know what it says, but... Okay, so Timothy. I had this marked, and then I think a little girl pulled my mark out this morning before I came. First Timothy 5. All right. So we're going to see here today a discussion about advice to Paul. Paul turns from advice on how to run the church, structurally, and what elders are to do, and what preachers are to do, and what the flock's to do. And he begins to look at the ministry side of the church in this chapter. And so I want to take a look at that. And let's take a look at verses 1 and 2, and then we're going to come back and talk about that. Chapter 5, verse 1 and 2. Anybody want to read that for me? Read loud.
Do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters, with absolute purity.
Okay, so relationships are important. All of us know in family relationships, in personal relationships, in work relationships, in casual relationships, how to deal with other people. Some of us are better at that than others. Some are very abrupt. Some don't really care for the feelings of another person. Some are over-empathetic to the point where they care so much they never get the point across. But there's a lot of ways to deal with people. And what he's coming back to, rebuke is an interesting word here, because rebuke here really means to discipline or to give instruction to someone who is doing something incorrect. All of us, we typically think about adults, parents, grandparents, disciplining children. You know, when your child is about to do something, as a parent, you discipline them. We don't call it rebuke. Rebuke has an air of a sting, has an air of a harshness to it. I'm not sure whether that's the proper tone for what this was to convey, or whether that's just kind of a modern reading of the word. But I want to sort of dissect that word, because it's important to understand what Paul is talking about here. So in a church, there are times when you have to have a conversation with somebody, like it or not, that is a hard conversation about what they're doing. And he's calling that rebuke. We talk about church discipline. Not practiced very much in the church anymore. I'm sad to say. I mean, I'm glad in some respects and sad in others, because if you do it improperly, it creates huge problems. If you do it properly, it's a wonderful way to build fellowship within the church, just like in families. You ever know families who can sit down and have a frank conversation with one another about what somebody's doing without everybody getting up in a huff and walking out and taking it personal? And none of us have families like that, probably. But there are people who are good at that. And there are people who can come and say something to you that you would not like to hear, but at the end of the time, you take it as a constructive criticism, and you thank them, and you go away friends. Other times, you slam the door, walk out, do whatever we do to express our disapproval. What Paul is talking about here is Timothy at times was going to have a discussion with people. Timothy was a young man, so he talks about this, and he talks about gender, he talks about age, and he talks about how we relate to people that are older and younger than us. All of us that are older, the natural role for us is to instruct younger people. We feel that role. We've done it as parents. We don't like it so much when the shoe is on the other foot, as they say, and one of our children comes to us and says, Dad, what you're doing, you shouldn't be doing. We sort of feel stung by that, true as it may be. We feel stung by that. And so that's why Paul is writing this. Paul is writing to Timothy. Timothy's a young man. And he says, do not rebuke an older man harshly, so with ugliness or disdain or with anger or bitterness, but exhort him, encourage him, in other words, as if he were your father. I used to have, when I worked for IBM, I used to have some branch managers that I loved. I had other ones that I despised. They were all good businessmen, but I didn't like them. And the reason for that is that we had a term called walk in the park. And Dave down here this morning? Dave will remember when your manager or branch manager said, I wanted to go have a little walk in the park with you. That was a time when you got away from the microphones and the note-taking and the earshot of anybody else, and you had a very frank conversation about something. either something that you were going to have to do as an employee, you didn't want to do, or you didn't like to do, or something you were doing in the office that you shouldn't be doing. But all of those, if handled well, the employee and the manager would come back and the actions would change and people would do them. It was stressful for a manager to go through that walk in the park. And I had to do that. A lot of managers had to do that. And it's stressful, both for the employee and the manager. But if you did it right, and we had a lot of counseling on that, how to do it right, then it becomes a positive. And that's really what Paul is saying here to Timothy. If you've got to go have a conversation that you don't want to have, act like it's your father. And I mean father in a good relationship way, not bad one. You know, sit down, put your arm around somebody, sit down in a way that's not heard by other people so that they're not embarrassed in front of their peers. Have a conversation that's a frank conversation and do it in love. And that's, you know, for all of us, these are important words for us to hear because we all have relationships where somebody will say something to us. And because we're ticked off about something else, not have anything to do with them, we bark at them, you know, or we come back and we cut their legs off because we're mad at the world. And that's not really the right way to do it. I mean, we all do it, but that's not the right way to do it. So Paul says to Timothy, if he's an older man, exhort him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as brothers. So if you've got to go have a conversation with a man younger than you, treat him like your brother. You know, don't treat him like he's somebody that's, you know, from Mars. Treat him like he's your younger brother. And then he goes on to say, older women treat as mothers and younger women as sisters. And of course, he adds, of course, relating to the women, you know, with absolute purity. You know, because it's so important in a church setting to not have anything other than church things involved in discussions you have. Not physical characteristics. And I would say this. We all ought to think about, there's another little teaching down here. We ought to think about who we like and who we give favoritism to. You know, do we give favoritism to people who are like us? Do we give favoritism to people that are educated or uneducated, or who are rich, who are poor, who are black or white or Asian or whatever color, or nationality or origin, or if they're from the north or from the south? You know, do we give preferential treatment? Or do we treat them like people that deserve our love and respect, and we reach out to them? I mean, we're all human, so we all have our own little biases, but as best we can, we need to get rid of those. And certainly if it's gender between men and women or women and men, it needs to be on a platonic level, you know, brothers and sisters, as opposed to anything other than that. And that's really the admonition that Paul has given Timothy. Timothy's a young guy. My guess is... probably fit, walks, does all the things, you know, that people do. And so my guess is he was just kind of forewarning him about things that might happen in the church. We probably could all talk about situations where we've seen ministry go awry, whether it is people getting too close and shouldn't be getting too close, whether it is people who should have a Christian relationship, but because of some personal issue unrelated to God, they get mad at each other and they get mad at God and they go off and they get bitter and whatever. All of those things are wrong, and we need to come back as best we can. I mean, we're all human, but Paul's admonition to Timothy gives us clear instructions on how to deal with people and how to think about it. And everything we do, we should do in love, whether it's have a frank discussion with somebody. We should do it in a spirit of love, not in a spirit of anger, not in a spirit of, gotcha, not in a spirit of trying to put them down. We don't do it in front of other people to humiliate them. There's just some common sense things that you should do. Not that we all do them, but we should do them. And so, you know, that's important. Then he goes on in verse 3, and he says, give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. I want to stop there for a second. The church at this time was not a wealthy institution. The church was made up many times of outcasts of society. They came to the church because the church gave them unconditional love. They felt that love from God. They joined the church. They became part of the fellowship. But not all of them were wealthy. Some were. And you see other teachings in the Bible, and especially in Paul's letters, about wealth and not to treat a slave different than a, you know, free person, or not to treat rich versus poor. But many people in the church were poor, and they banded together to support one another in their time of need. And so he says here, give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. We're going to talk a little bit more about what that means. He says, but if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn, first of all, to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family, and so repaying their parents and grandparents, for this is pleasing to God. So many times, you know, we know the circle of life. We, as parents, we give undivided care to our children. We raise them, we care for them, we change their diapers, we put bandages on their little boo-boos, we hold them, we comfort them, we do all sorts of things. And I'm sad to say, for all of us that are kind of on the other end of that spectrum, as we get older, we need some of that same care from our own children. And in today's world, I think it's getting more difficult, you know, because children don't live at home with their parents, or don't live, maybe some are living more with them than we'd like to see them now, but, you know, they don't live in proximity. We don't live next door to one another. You know, your children, like our son lives in North Carolina, our daughter's here, but our son lives in North Carolina. You know, people that have big families, their kids move off and they're gone. And so their parents live, you know, with a sibling, or with a son or a daughter, or with a son, by a son or a daughter. And it's harder and harder to provide that family care. But the standard that Paul teaches here is families should take care of families. If we're Christians, one of our first calls is to take care of our family. You know, because if we don't do that, we don't put the Christian walk in its proper context. We do not care for our family, then we are walking away from one of the primary responsibilities God gave us families for, is the care and nurture and love of one another. It's not just from the parents down, it's both ways. And so he's saying here that and he uses widow, but I want you to think more generally than that, because that was the particular problem that they dealt with. But if you've got children, if you've got brothers and sisters, if you've got family, we should be the first to jump to their defense. We should be the first to help them out. Now, I know the church wants to help, and we, you know, when anybody has needs, we rally around and we provide food and we supply support. And I'm not saying don't do any of that, because that's all wonderful. That's all caring. That's all loving ministry. But in terms of people living long term, back then, most of these widows had no place to live, no money to buy food, no way to earn a living. The only way they could earn a living, frankly, was to become a prostitute. And that was not, certainly as a Christian, that wasn't something that was looked upon with any favor. And so they had needs. And if their husbands didn't leave the money, or they didn't have wealth, then they had no way to live. And so a brother or a father or a family member would assume that responsibility and take care of them. And that's what he's saying here. So so he's defining really in need as somebody who has no one to care for them, no one to help them, no family, no anything to help them out. And he says, for this is pleasing to God. And we all know sometimes how difficult it is to be a caregiver. That's a hard role, a hard task, both for the person receiving the care and the person giving the care. But it is a role that is pleasing to God, because it's honoring our mothers and our fathers. It's honoring those family members that we love. And that is part of, you know, one of our commandments, to honor thy mother and father. And so we really need to do that. And then he goes on to say in verse 5, the widow who is really in need and left all alone puts her hope in God and continues night and day to pray and ask God for help. That's important. You know, in that day and time, the widows who were destitute, all they had was the church. All they had was this community of believers that was all banded together to help each other out. And so that's who they put their hope in. They put their hope in God and their hope in their fellow believer. And that's what he's talking about here. He says, but the widow who lives, he's going to get a little meddling now. He says, for the widow who lives for pleasure is dead even though she lives. And again, he's talking about widows here who are spiritually dead. They don't live for God. They're not living for God. I'll make one other point here as I go. They use the term 60 years old here. You'll see that later. In that day and time, they thought